History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We've learned they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to do something about it. Our primary mission here has always been to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The gentleman we get to visit with today is turning 100 this weekend in Colorado Springs, Colorado, but 80 years ago, he was marking his 20th birthday as a prisoner of war. We're going to get to that POW experience soon enough, but let's go back to the beginning with World War II veteran Ed Beck.
Well, I was born in Annville, Pennsylvania, and from there we had moved down to Lebanon, and then I got back into the country again, and I went to the one-room schoolhouse. We had the same teacher for 7 years, same teacher. She taught all grades. Miss Edith Alkaberger, I mean, never forget her, but, and she was real strict. She was one of them white bonnets. She was called the United Christians. So anyway, I grew up there out in the country for quite some time, and finally, I went back into the city. Then I went to state at Hershey, and I was in room to high school up there, Hershey High School.
So when you say out in the country, did you grow up on a farm?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I worked on a farm when I was 12 years old. I got hired for a farmer there, Raymond Isaac Hagee. And I worked for him for probably 4 years, and then I went back into the Army. But I graduated from Hershey High School. One thing about it, you can smell that chocolate, especially in summertime. And
Well, and I want to ask about something else, because you did mention, and some people can make the connection, but you went to work for a farmer when you were 12. Yeah. Most people alive today did not live through the Great Depression. Can you help us understand what those years were like, what you remember about those days?
Well, you were just lucky to have something to eat. Because I remember when we were living there, we were lucky to eat once a day. We got back in the country, and then my dad got with that farm there, and we got to raise our own crops, and we were raising that stuff. We had, I guess, we had about 3 or 4 acres, you know. So that's how we made it. And I had to do the farming and stuff for like that there, because I was the oldest of the children. My brothers, he got that, my dad, I got my dad, and he said, I'm going to name one, my brother was named the same as my dad, and so I got to do a lot of stuff that he didn't have to do.
What was the toughest farm job that you had to do?
Bringing in the hay and all that stuff. It was a big farm, and I think we had 40 acres. But anyway, bringing the cattle in, had to tie the cows up so they could milk them. And he used to use them all by hand, and finally he got a milker. So he was a good man, and his son's name was Harold, and Harold was about 2 years older than I was. Bad rainy days when you couldn't work outside, but we sit in the barn and talk. He had a big barn with all the hay and straw in it. We used to make tunnels and go down and through, and you try to put like a hide and seek, you know. So anyhow, you never knew where you're gonna come up. And we'd be dug down in through, and you come up to see if you can see them in the guys there, and we'd take a big bag and make what's called a knot bag, anyhow. And you just throw that and get hit you, then you had to go after him. But I remember you'd be like a groundhog coming out, you'd lift your head up through the straw, you know, and then dig down in. Oh, yeah.
You mentioned that, sitting around in the barn talking when it was rainy and muddy outside. Yeah. That makes me wonder, when you were that age, when you were a boy, did you have some big dreams, some ambitions of, hey, someday this is what I'm going to do or who I'm going
to
be?
No. All I wanted to do was get to high school. And when I finally got to, I left there, well, we were out in the country and we had a mountain walk to school. And wintertime, the snow was even with the fences. Yeah, a lot of times you walk through the fields, you on the roads, 3-4 foot of snow. So I made it rough and tough that way. Well, being as the oldest of the children, but I had a lot of things I had to do. And I had to go out and dig up the garden and all that stuff. And when we got out in the country, raise our own crops, we had more to eat. When we were in the city, luckily we eat once a day. And I finally went to started going to Hershey High School because I couldn't ride the bus to Annville, but I ride the streetcar. I got 5 cents to school and 5 cents back, I think, or something like that. It was 12 miles to school anyhow.
Well, and it's while you were in high school, I guess if I'm doing the math, you would have been 16 when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Do you have a memory of December 7th, 1941?
Yeah. I wanted to get in the service, and my mother said no when I was 17.
Well, yeah, and even, you know what, let me ask you about something else first. Because I think you told me your grandfather came to America from Germany, right?
Yeah, my grandfather, he was born in Berlin, mm-hmm. And he came to the States.
You asked your father growing up if he would teach you German?
Yeah, I wanted to, he said no, you don't need it. But it would have helped me in the prison camp.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. But before you're ever thinking about being a prisoner, and probably before you thought about going in the service, do you remember how you heard the news on December 7th, how you found out what happened at Pearl Harbor?
We had an old battle operator radio that came on the news, and that they attacked Pearl Harbor. I was just going to turn 17, I guess, and some of the other guys I knew, they got in the service. And I wanted to go, and my mother said, no, 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 and she wouldn't sign. So finally, as soon as I got 18, I went down there, and I was gone. And they didn't know where I was. And sometimes things get a little hairy. I got pictures and stuff from way back there, you know.
Why were you so determined to go in?
Sometimes you wonder about it, but that some of us wanted to go. A lot of guys wanted to go, you know, and because they wanted to fight for their country.
Well, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, and this I think this is interesting because the guy who introduced me to you, Mark Schaefer, is a teacher. He's had you come out and speak to his students. You left high school to join the Army, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you didn't finish high school. You said, I'm going to go fight this war.
Yeah, that's what I was. I went into there and after 3 years, I guess it was 3 years, but then I got went back and went to finish school. And I went back to high school. I finished high school at Hershey, and that's when I had to ride the streetcar.
But there was a lot that you had to survive in between. So you joined the Army as soon as you turned 18. That's February of 1943. There's still a lot of war left. What kind of training did you get? Where did they send you?
Went to Camp Atterbury, Indiana, and from there I went to. They just kept me going from one post to another post. I just wanted to be in the service. I wanted to serve my country. And that's a lot I wanted to do. And some guys, they didn't want to get in. But I volunteered. I went in and went through Cape Atterbury, Indiana. I can't remember all the posts anymore. I was stationed in California. I was stationed down in Arizona. And I was in Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
I'm just curious, since you were going to be shipping out across the Atlantic to Europe, had you ever been on a ship before?
No. We crossed over there and landed in England first, I think, and then from there we went into France.
And what was that like, that journey aboard ship?
Well, it was just a kid yet. We always talked about different things, what we're going to do and everything, you know. My dad, I guess he had wanted to try to get in the service, but if he had a couple, 3-4 children, they wouldn't take, you know.
I know this is kind of a weird question, but I'm always curious how you people really felt. So when you're leaving America and you're heading to Europe And you know you're going to be fighting. Did you think you were going to make it back?
No, that never gave me a thought. I don't know. Some of us felt different in ways, but some of us were volunteered, wanted to go. And then the other ones, they were all drafted. I just wanted to fight for my country. I wanted to be a soldier. Well, I wanted to get in the Navy, and I went down there, and they wouldn't take me because of my eyes. And then finally went to the Army. I think I went to the Marine Corps, too. Because of my eyes, they wore glasses, and they didn't take them. They started taking them later after I happened. So that's how I got into the Army. And then I still see my mother just crying, you know. So I said, well, and my brother and sister, they're younger than I. And I said, I want to fight for my country. I said, this is my country. And I'm German descent anyhow. And I said, that's really want to fight my own people. That was Germans, you know. But I went. And I did it.
You've got a hat here that says World War II and Korean War veteran. It's got a lot of pins on there. There's an Army pin. There's a combat infantry badge. You've been awarded the Bronze Star. I see the POW MIA emblem. But there's also a little circle with a golden lion in the middle, the emblem of the 106th Infantry Division. When did you become part of the 106th?
1944.
Were you already in Europe when they put you in there?
No, I went with them. I went the troop ship. We got a troop ship, and there was one regiment, a 315th regiment. That's the one I was in.
Do you remember your first taste of combat, your first indication of what war was like?
We were getting bombed a lot. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to go with an outfit where there's a sergeant there. And we went out, and well, anyhow, we were... Snow and ice, it was back in December 1944, yeah. And then when I got captured, I had a German accent. It didn't do me any good. But I can remember that. But I can still see that German captain, and he said, "You're German." And I said, "I'm an American soldier. Name, rank, and serial number." That's what you tell them.
Yeah, and I've met a couple other gentlemen who served in the 106th, and there were thousands of men from that division that were surrendered at the same time because of being surrounded there.
Well, I remember that we got the Germans coming in there, you know, they had us surrounded. I wanted to fight to get the hell out of there. The guy said, "You're crazy." I said, "Well, I'm still crazy then," but they said, "You're crazy." He said, "If you get out of here," he said, "they're going to kill you." I said, "Better dead than this here." So that's the way it was. And stuff, some days your memory's a little better than other days. I don't know, but I try to remember some of the guys, you know, that they found out about General Ludwig Beck, that German general, and they said, "Are you part of him?" I said, "I don't think so," because I'm American. And I said, but I remember General Ludwig Beck, I read up about him and everything, because he decided that I want to go in and say goodbye to my wife and children. And he goes in and takes his pistol and shoots himself in the head. That's how the general died.
General Ludwig Beck was part of two attempts to kill Adolf Hitler and overthrow the Nazi regime. So even though Edwin Beck was no relation to General Ludwig Beck, he was punished as a prisoner because he bore that surname. We'll hear about Ed's time in captivity and also how he views the concept of freedom as he marks birthday number 100 this weekend. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with World War II veteran and ex-prisoner of war, Ed Beck of Colorado Springs, Colorado, where he and his family are celebrating his 100th birthday this weekend. Ed sure wishes his wife, Faye, were still around to celebrate with him. Together, they had 8 children, none of whom would have ever been born if Ed didn't survive 6 months of starvation, cold, and forced labor as a prisoner of war. He became a POW on December 19, 1944, when he and 7,000 other men serving in the 106th Infantry Division were cut off and surrounded in the Battle of the Bulge and given no choice but to surrender. You know, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, a teenager, half a world away from home, and you find out you and thousands of others are going to have to surrender because you're surrounded. Had you ever thought about being a prisoner before? Imagine what that might be like?
I never thought about being a prisoner because, we were American soldiers and we were supposed to be fighting the war and we were in their country. Anyway, when they said that about being a prisoner, I couldn't believe that. Didn't know what it was going to be like. And when they did finally get in and we were marching, I tell this guy, I said, I'm getting out of here. He said, "You're crazy." I said, "Well, very crazy." And anyhow, so I picked a date. And when we were marching out of there, they marched in the, we working in the stone carver. I break a rock.
Yeah, and for our listeners, I want to see if we can give them a chronological picture here and do it in the order it happened. So maybe tell me about that first day once you guys were prisoners. What did the Germans do with you?
They walked. Because we had to walk to the camp. Some of the guys used to try to really get escape. They shot them anyhow.
You saw that happen? Guys get shot?
They take it off and they shoot right in the middle, back to in the back of the day, but a lot of them didn't make it.
And this is the, you know, the coldest winter on record in Europe. This is mid-December. You're marching through the snow.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Cold. And we didn't have the proper equipment because they are. We just had the old combat, like the old combat boots, and you walk in the snow. They get the water. You get wet feet anyhow. And my feet were so bad, and I kept telling the German professor of my feet and everything. He said, "But the tough finally, we got to the camp and I got my sock and start drying up, and you know." But some of the stuff comes back some days. But I never thought I was going to be a prisoner. That's the thing. And I was going to keep on going. And that sergeant told me, he said, "I'm in charge, not you." So but I was going to take off, and I finally did take off, but I got back to our lines.
But that was 6 months later, and I want to really understand what you went through. So how much did you weigh when you got captured?
I was about 140, and when I got on the scale right after the war, and I got on the scale, I was 85 pounds. Still working in that stone quarry, breaking rock, and we always tried to get in the front of the line because they had two different size hammers. They had a 16-pound and a 10-pound. And I always tried to get in the front of the line and get the 10-pound hammer. Yeah. And then we'd be out there, we'd break that rock. And then I can remember we were out there that one day. You hear a roaring noise. The German guards have run, and here comes the B-17s up there. And ground was even shaking. But you have 200 or 300 B-17s and 4 engines. Well, you just live from one day at a time because you don't know when you're going to eat again.
Yeah, can you help us understand that? What you had to eat?
It wasn't very much, but the Germans were eating it too because the Germans were all of them were hurting because of the war and everything. So they didn't have the food like they normally have. But I made it. Other guys said, you're not going to make it. I said, I'll make it. And some of them didn't make it. They just, this one guy, he wouldn't get up or nothing. He was 18 years old, and he finally just lay there and died. He wouldn't get up. And the little bit of food that we got, we'd give him some to keep him alive, and he just gave up, completely surrendered.
And what was the first camp you were in?
12A. Then they put us on the box cars and locked us up in there, and you couldn't get up. They slammed them doors and locked them shut.
I've heard other POWs talk about these box cars, the 40 and 8, yeah. 40 men or 8 horses. How many of you guys do you think they smashed into there?
I think we had 80 of the guys in there.
Wow.
And we couldn't turn it. You couldn't lay down or not. You had to stand. You stood up all the time.
There's no room to do anything but stand.
You fall down, but you couldn't fall down because you're just stacked up in there.
What if you have to go to the bathroom?
They stop about once a day and let you out, and then you had to jump out of the car, and go use they had the wooded area there, and then you get back in there going again. But that German captain, that's when I wanted to kill him.
Why is that?
Oh man, he interrogated me and told me all the stuff, you know, and I wouldn't tell him nothing because I didn't know anything. I was only 18 years old. I'll never forget it, but I can still see him, and he said, "You're a German." And I said, "I'm an American soldier," and you put the name, rank, and trail number.
You've highlighted how little you had to eat, going from 140 pounds to 85 in 6 months. What about trying to stay warm at night? Because, again, this is a crazy cold winter. What were your sleeping conditions like?
They weren't very good. We'd sleep on the floor. But sometimes you try to get together a little bit and try to keep each other warm. And we just figure when we're going to eat. That's all we think about. You're hungry. That's all you think about, food. And we used to talk about how your mother used to make this and you know, I have a little piece of paper, and I used to write this stuff down and put recipes down that the guys used to say, "This is the way my mother used to make this stuff, you know." You just wonder when you're going to eat, you know.
I have had quite a few POWs mention the bread. The Germans had some special bread to feed you.
Yeah, some of it was almost black. Yeah, we had the black bread, the hard bread. It's something to keep you alive that you could keep on working. Because I was out there with that sledgehammer breaking rock that wasn't during the daytime.
Yeah, so not every prisoner of war camp had this as a feature, but you guys were actually forced into labor. It was a forced labor camp where you were.
I guess that's what you call it, because you march out in the morning, you get up and it's still just starting to get light. I can still see them. Start kind of iron spy, dry the cotton, and make everybody's there. Mm-hmm. But I can still hear him cotton. And looking, and we march out to the stone quarry, get your hammer, and start breaking rock. Well, I guess everybody tried to make them small enough that you can pick them up, the guards said, that's small enough, and you could hardly pick the damn thing up anyhow. And they had to carts and put in the railroad, like, and the big carts, and you have to throw these rocks in there, and they took it down, and they crush them, and used to build the roads, and so I had to help the German build the roads and stuff, but breaking the rocks.
That rock quarry was near Stalag 4G, the third prison camp Ed spent time in, following Stalag 12A and Stalag 4B.
My dad didn't talk much German, because my mother didn't understand it too good. But Otherwise, when I asked Dad to teach me German, he said, you don't need it.
Could have used it in the prison camp. How about, you know, so the Germans didn't have a lot of food for you. They gave you some of that bread with tree flour or sawdust in it. Yeah. But how about the Red Cross? Did you ever get a parcel from them?
I got one while I was there. Some of the guys got more because they went to Mountaineer War Camp, and that's when I didn't get that parcel anymore. But I think I got two. I know I had one, and many of them we even had cigarettes in it.
Did you smoke them or trade them?
I think they were Chesterfield cigarettes. I'm not sure anymore.
So did you actually smoke them, or did you trade them for something else?
I think I traded them to the Germans for, yeah,
for some food.
Yeah. I don't know what it was anymore, but they had that black bread and everything, you know.
And you went to high school in Hershey, Pennsylvania. You said you could smell the chocolate from all over town. Did you ever get a chocolate bar there?
Hell no. You didn't get nothing like that. You just got the black bread, and I can't remember what you got, some kind of carrots or something, you know. Just a trip, yeah.
And how about your family? Did they know what had happened to you?
Well, they didn't hear nothing because the transportation or the schools, the transportation stuff wasn't like it is now. And it was, I guess, about 2 months and they finally found out I was a prisoner of war.
You've got this letter on your mantle. It's written on a postcard that says, Kriegsgefangenlager, which means prisoner of war camp in German. And it says, Dear Dad, just a few lines to say hello and ask how everyone is. There isn't much to write about, but I sure do wish I was home. And I know I soon will be. Just take good care of Mother and send some candy, raisins, peanuts, or anything the Red Cross will let you send. Well, so long for now, Dad. Love, Edwin. I can tell you're remembering what it was like to write that, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you never know if you're going to get back home or nothing, you know. You just live one day from another because of the little bit of food that the Germans give you. Because they didn't have too much anymore either. Some of the German civilians would complain about using their food to feed us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could see the emotion on your face and just remembering writing that letter 80 years ago to your parents. I've got to ask a couple questions. One, you told me about that young man who just gave up, who didn't get up that day and he died. Did you ever think about giving up? Did you ever feel like giving up?
No, I wanted to do all the other guys, we just wanted to get the hell out of there and get home.
What do you think it was that kept you going or kept that hope in your heart?
Well, I guess because the German in me, I don't know him. Because I couldn't understand why things are the way they is. But all you talk was about eating. You talk about food. My mother used to make this, your mother used to make that. And I try to remember some of the guys' names. And the last 2 years, I guess I'm starting to lose it now. But I used to dream it. You used to dream that you're still in the prison camp and you wanted something to eat. And then when I told the guys, I said, I'm getting out of here. He said, if you escape, they'll kill you. They won't give you a second chance. I said, I know that. But I said, I'm going to get out of here. One day, one guy asked me when I'm going to go. I said, one day when the guards are switching around, I said, that's when I'm going to get out of here. So the one guy says, I'm going with you. He said, when are we going to go? And I said, I'll pick a day when the generals, they were going to dinner and everything. And I had got a pair of wire cutters. This one guy, I don't know where he got them. But anyhow, that's when I said, give me them. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to go home. He said, you're going to die.
Well, we know that's not what happened because we're hearing his voice, and he's celebrating birthday number 100 this weekend in Colorado Springs. But how did things unfold from there almost 80 years ago? We're going to hear that from Ed Beck himself when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. You know, there are a lot of things I've said on the radio over the years, but here's one sentence I have never uttered before. How would you like to celebrate a World War II veteran's 100th birthday while visiting the Holy Land with him? And this World War II veteran happens to be the last surviving member of the squadron that sent the Enola Gay to Hiroshima. He's decided he wants to reach the century mark in Israel, and you can be there with him if you go to this website, travelerjourneys.life. That's travelerjourneys.life. I'll give you a phone number in a moment, but that website again, travelerjourneys.life. The dates will be June 7th through the 19th, but you'll have to sign up with your deposit by February 15th. The website again, travelerjourneys.life, or call my friend Debbie at this number, 559-740-9436. That's 559-740-9436.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 100-year-old ex-prisoner of war, Ed Beck of Colorado Springs, Colorado. Originally from Pennsylvania, he served in Company A, 1st Battalion, 422nd Infantry Regiment of the 106th Infantry Division in Europe during World War II. He became a prisoner in the early days of the Battle of the Bulge, marching through the snow to Stalag 12A in Limburg, Germany, before being moved to Stalag 4B in Mühlberg. His final camp was Stalag 4G. In Oschatz, where he was forced to swing a heavy hammer in a rock quarry to create gravel for roads, all the while shrinking from 140 pounds to under 85 pounds as he ate anything he could find, even potato peeling soup. A fellow POW from Russia at Stalag 4G had procured some wire cutters, and even though he knew they'd be executed if they were caught, Ed and a couple of fellow prisoners decided it was worth the chance and seized the moment while the German guards were changing shifts.
So I've just been a little out of hope to crawl through the fence, and then the two guys went with me. I just wish I could remember their names. I would be responsible for their death because of, like I said, they will give you a second chance.
So you were actually able to cut through the fence, and the Germans didn't see you?
No, we did it when they're changing guards, and they were going to dinner and everything, mm-hmm. And it was all quiet, so they never expected that. I just kind of rode around home, and we took off, and we didn't go through the fields and everything because the Germans were all dug in. And we went down the road, and we got at a corner, and there's the road come up this way, and we were going across, and a whole platoon of German troops down there, and we said, "Oh, hell." And I'm trying to remember his name, but I said, "Just keep walking. And when the guy, because he was in charge, he yelled, hey, and I said, keep walking. They didn't come after us, but they knew there was a prison camp right up there, so they knew we were ex-prisoners. But the one guy, he was going to come and get us, because there were two or three of them, and the guy in charge, he said, let them go. And we just kept on going, and we got into Berlin, and then finally got back with the American troops, and got some good American food. Well, it was better than the fridge camping.
Could your stomach handle it, though?
Oh, no, it used to feel bad. Yeah, it was too rich. But when you got back into the camp, well, then you got all the other stuff, especially when you got into France, anyhow.
Can you describe for us that feeling? Because I'm just putting myself in your shoes. You risked your life to escape from that camp. Yeah. The Germans almost capture you, but you make it to your fellow Americans. When you saw those American GIs, what did that feel like?
Because I'm crying, I guess. Yeah, hug each other. They wouldn't know how they treated you and everything, you know. So I got treated a little bit worse than some of the others because of that German general named Beck. And then my name is Beck, and then they were whatever. But lots of times it comes back, but it's not like it used to be, but I used to dream all the time that you're still a prisoner and you want to escape, you're hungry. That's what you're talking about, food.
You had to be pretty weak by then, too.
Well, I just kept going like I said, how do you do it? I always thought about going home, see Mom and Dad again.
And what was that like when you got to go home and see them again?
Oh, man, it's a different world. They wonder how you're feeling. Well, I was down to about 80 pounds. Between one scale says 80, one says it's 85, so I don't know which one it was.
So did they even recognize you?
Oh, yeah. I was pretty thin. Mm-hmm. I was like a skeleton, I guess. And I stuck with the Army. I got out for a while. And then
you had to finish high school, didn't you?
Yeah, I finished high school. I was in 11th grade, so I finished high school.
Did you have any other students at Hershey High School who had been a guest of the Gestapo for 6 months?
No, one of them had been in the Army, but they had never been captured.
I'm just imagining high schoolers now.
Oh, it's all a little different, but anyhow, a lot of times you don't want to talk about it, you're trying to forget it. You had them, I dream all the time that I'm still in the camp. And then I wake up, and I'm afraid to move, and I just roll my head, my eyes, and I saw out of the window, and I said, I'm home.
Thank you for sharing that, because most of us would never have any idea. You're saying that for decades after the war, you would have this recurring dream, and it wasn't until you looked outside your window that you knew you were home.
Yeah.
Kind of like looking at Pike's Peak right there?
Yeah. I said, oh, and I was at home.
You know what I didn't ask you, Ed, is for all that time as a prisoner, marching through the snow, smashed into a 40-8, sleeping on the floor in one prison camp, smashing rocks in a work detail when you're not even getting fed, really. Of all the things you endured as a prisoner, what was the hardest part? What was the toughest element of it for you?
I guess the part that you just, especially if you're sleeping, you keep dreaming of being home and everything, and you never know. I never knew if I was going to get back home or not. You're living one day at a time. You got to do what they tell you, they'll take your rifle butt and hit you with it, you know. But when he was interrogating me, that's when I almost lost it, I guess, because when he said because there's a lot of words that I had the German accent anyhow, and then he said, you're a German, that's when I just wanted to get up and kill that guy. I said, I'm an American soldier, be treated as such.
So you go through all of that in World War II, you come back and finish high school, and I don't know that a lot of people listening would expect to hear what you decided to do next, because you went back in the Army and you ended up fighting in Korea.
Yeah.
Why?
I am a true American, and I believe in protecting this country. Even if you fight your own people, because I have that German in me, I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that I was on the right side. I don't know, I always wanted to be a soldier in a way. And that's why I stayed. That's why some of the guys say, after the prison camp, and they said, how come you stayed in? I said, well, because I'm a true American, and I got to fight in Korea. A lot of times I volunteer for a lot of things because I just wanted to fight for my country and I wanted to be free.
A lot of people talk about freedom, but you're one of the few people who knows what it's like to live in the absence of freedom. What kind of perspective does that leave you with?
Well, everyone should know how it would feel, how to really be in the way we were, in the way we were treated and all. And you lost your freedom. You're not free. You can't. You got to do what other than Germans tell you to do. But freedom is, in some ways, it's kind of hard to explain. But the thing is, if you're like enough, you get the prison camp, and you got to. You're just like a machine. You got to do what they tell you to do. I just was different from some of the other guys. Some of the guys, like I said, that one guy, he just completely surrendered, and he just laid down and died. And I just always wanted to come back home. I always thought mom and dad, my brother and sister, and I wanted to get back home. It's hard to explain in some ways. But freedom, you only know freedom when you're in that condition. Because they took a bit of that, stabbed you in the back, you didn't move fast enough, didn't hurt you, but they jagged you in your butt or something. You're just like a machine. You're nothing. And all I thought was getting out of there and going home. And that's when I got that chance. That's when I took off. They said if you escape, they'll kill you. They will give you a second chance. Mm-hmm. But I said, I'm going home. I said, you're going to die. I said, well, better than dead and living like that there. Because like I got down there. Went from about 140 down to 80 pounds, so.
And I think I hear you saying that you never understood the true value of freedom until you had to live without it.
Oh, yeah. That's what you do what they tell you, or you're dead. And freedom is something that everybody should really know. You really, really appreciate it. After you spend the time like that there. I imagine people, that even if they go to the jail and they spend time in the jail, they get out there and know what freedom is.
And you mentioned, you served in Korea as well, 1st Cavalry Division, and sounds like you had some close calls over there too.
Yeah, always tried to, when I was a sergeant then, and I always tried to lead my troops, and then they had the different times. I know the one guy found out that I had been a prisoner of war in World War II. He said, why in the hell did you stay? And he said, you wouldn't be here. You could be at home. I said, well, I'm American. I said, I'm an American soldier. My age and stuff, I had to go back because this is my country.
But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you told me that you almost got captured again in the Korean War by the Chinese.
Yeah, we went down there, and I had a driver in a truck, and we went to pick up supplies. And I told the guy, I said, you're on the wrong road. No, Sergeant, I said, you're on the wrong road. He said, no. I said, look, I'm in that ridge up there. Oh, them Chinese. I said, I told you. Well, he went that truck around, and I'll never forget that. But I tried to tell him, I said, you're on the wrong damn road. And we were going right into the enemy territory.
So if you hadn't turned around, you would have been surrounded, ambushed.
I wouldn't be here. No, I wouldn't be here. I'm just lucky. The man upstairs has been watching me all my life.
And you retired as a master sergeant. How many total years did you serve in the Army?
All told, 27. Mm-hmm. 27 years. And I was wanted to go for 30. And I said, no, I'm going to quit. And one guy said, well, they used to say, why in the hell did you stay after that prison camp? And I said, well, because I am an American soldier. And I raised my right hand to protect this country. And I've died. I fighting for it.
And I want to thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a story that nobody else could tell us. I'm wondering, as you get ready to turn 100 years old and you look back over a century on this planet, what would you say that you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'd say I'd proud to be an American soldier, and I'm proud that I stood and fought for it, and I didn't give up like some guys, and I just kept on going. I believe in freedom, and the only way you have freedom, you fight for it, and you live for it. And some guys, they're no longer here, they're gone.
What do you think of when you see that flag? There's one right on your hat, there's one outside flying at half staff. What comes to mind when you look at the Stars and Stripes?
That I am an American, and I'll fight and die for this country because I am an American. Sometimes it's hard to explain some things. I'm proud to be an American because this is the greatest country there is. This country has been around and fought in all these wars. When the evil people like Hitler and stuff and get up and start wars, the American soldiers are there to take them down.
And is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think is important for us to know?
I consider myself lucky that I had a good mother and dad. I lived in this great country. And then I went up into this Hershey High School, I'll never forget. Cheer, cheer for good old Hershey High. Wake up and echo and cheer her name. Send a volley shot below. Shake down the thunder from the sky.
The fight song is still in your head.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cheer, cheer for good old Hershey High. Wake up the echo and shake down the thunder from the sky. Whether the odds be great or small, Hershey High will win the world.
Well, and you've been demonstrating that resilience for almost 100 years. Let me ask you this, because I asked you what you're most proud of, but maybe there's something you're still looking forward to. Is there something you haven't done yet in almost 100 years that maybe is still on your list? You'd like to say you did that?
I don't know what I want to say, but it's just that I'm proud of being American. Mm-hmm. I'd do it all over again. I'm willing to fight and die for even for this day, because I guess I'm different from everybody else.
One of a kind, Ed Beck, marking birthday number 100 this weekend in Colorado Springs. Thanks to Mark Schaefer of Honor Flight of Southern Colorado for introducing us to Ed. And I also want to thank the Mountain West Conference for allowing us to record this conversation in their headquarters. I know Ed really enjoyed the coffee and the beautiful views of Pikes Peak. You can find photos and a short video with Ed on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thank you for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again of those four words that ex-POWs like Ed Beck understand at a deeper level than we ever could. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.